Welcome to Take It Off, the podcast where we ditch the heavy layers and get real about who we truly are beneath it all. I'm Julie, and together with my co-host and friend, Jess, we'll share our own stories and explore the triumphs and tribulations of being a woman in today's world. Let's get real, have some laughs, and inspire each other to embrace our true selves. Welcome to Take It Off. Welcome back, friends. We are here with another episode of Take It Off. And we last left you with our two-part series, calling it a series, on burnout. And one of the things, there were many things that I loved from recording those episodes, but one of the things I love, Jess, is what you left our listeners with. And that was this burnout quiz. It was a series of questions to ask yourself to really determine, am I burned out? Am I moving towards burnout? And one of the questions that really resonated with me was the question, are you feeling stuck? And as we started to talk about what our next episode would be, this idea of stuckness or creative blocks was bubbling up, and we thought we would do an episode on what does it feel like to be stuck and how do you get unstuck. And I don't know about you, but we're recording this in the middle of February, and I feel like this year has been like at least 100 days. So, if you're like us or like me, I don't want to speak for you, but you might be finding yourself feeling a little stuck in this northeastern winter that we're having here in Pennsylvania. So we hope this will be a helpful episode to help you get some clarity on what it feels like to be stuck, and then more importantly, give you some practical tips to get unstuck.
Yes, that's perfect. Yeah, I think, I know we were just talking about how it feels like kids are home nonstop, whether it's school closures or sickness, and, you know, whether I have the motivation to achieve at work or not, or at home or do anything, I feel like it's a stop start.
Yes.
Like there's, you know, with young kids especially, you know, I still have a super young one at home. It's like, yeah, the world just sort of turns upside down when she's home unexpectedly, especially.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that there are 1,000 different ways that we can feel stuck. I think we've probably already mentioned about 900. But okay, so like, if I say to you, like, I'm feeling stuck, what would come to your mind, like what are the associations that you make with the feeling of stuckness?
Yeah. Currently for me, and I've always been an achiever, someone who's goal-oriented, a planner. And currently, where I am in my entrepreneurial journey, if I were to answer that question for you, it would be, I'm not getting the yeses to my offers or the external validation for things that I'm sharing out in the world. And that, when I'm looking externally for that validation, makes me feel a little stuck. And I just feel like I'm doing all of these things, but nothing's coming to fruition. And it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
What about you?
Right now, a way that I have noticed a shift in stuckness, I will say, you and I both have, we're both early risers, right?
Yeah.
And I used to get up every morning at 4, and I don't get up every morning at 4 anymore, and when I do, I definitely make time for a nap later in the day, but I love that time of day because I think that the residual energy in our house and in the world in general is really just like, it's low, it's quiet. And I find I do my best like thinking and writing at that time.
Okay.
And so recently, like, I think I was feeling really unmotivated and uninspired. I think I lacked a clear direction in where I was going with my work. And I found it impossible to get out of bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, to say I was sleeping late, like, for me, 7 o'clock is incredibly late. Yes. Like, I didn't even know if my body could sleep until 7 yeah. until recently. And, yeah, I was waking up at 7 and, like, mad dash to get the kids out yeah. the door. And, yeah, something shifted inside of me where I think I connected with that feeling of inspiration again. Mm. And I found myself, like, several mornings this week just, like, popping out of bed at 4 again and, like, really enjoying those morning hours. And, you know, the inspiration to write was coming from really, like, deep within.
Yeah.
So I think that a disconnect from that feeling of inspiration is what was really, like, giving me that stuck feeling. And, you know, whatever it is, I think it was just, like, a connection with, like, a certain type of messaging and a layer of purpose within my work. But I do think that that's the shift that sort of has helped me get things moving yeah. again.
So do you feel like it was a little bit of clarity? Like, you were starting to have, like, more clarity of what the purpose of your business was, and that motivated you?
I think I was feeling scattered. I think I was feeling like I had too many different directions, and I wasn't really, like, honed in on a purpose. And maybe, like, I don't know if it's just me, but I know, like, when my messaging feels unorganized, I can't, and I think it might be, like, the fact that I'm a communications person at my core, you know, marketing and PR and writing are, like, in my blood. And if there is some sort of disalignment in, like, the messaging in my head, I have no ability to, like, translate those messages into the world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it came down to clarity for me.
Good.
Yeah, I think I was really just able to, like, hone in on a little bit tighter on, like, who I wanted to help and how I wanted to help them, you know, as it relates to, like, entrepreneurial expansion and, and women finding identity, and how do you make all of those things, like, work together. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that there are, when it comes to feeling stuck, if I think about the things that we've both talked about, I mean, we gave professional examples, but I think that those relate well to personal lives too. Like, I think the feeling of stuck can be confusing because I think that there are, there's just so many different ways you can feel stuck.
Yeah.
As we've been, you know, preparing for this episode, I think we've really figured out that there are five main sort of, like, stuck categories. And I think that's how we're gonna break it down into these five main categories.
Okay.
But there's one category I think we both agree that we're going to sort of table for now. One of the categories, I'll just go high level. We're gonna talk about mental stuckness, emotional stuckness, energetic stuckness. When stuckness is, like, outside of your control, so external stuckness. And then the last one is, like, a burnout-induced or, like, nervous system stuckness. So we did talk at length in our last two episodes about burnout. But I think that, you know, layered with that is also, like, the actual nervous system response to stuckness, like, freeze, you know, your fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Freeze is that, like, it's like a physiological feeling of stuckness. And we're not going to dive into that one today because I think that that's a whole separate category of, like really healing your nervous system, giving yourself those, like, micro moments of safety. There's layers of, you know, trauma and processing trauma within that. And so that is not, that's a completely valid form of stuckness. But for the purposes of our conversation today, we're going to focus on mental, emotional, energetic, and external stuckness.
Well, and just to put a plug in for those two episodes we did on burnout again, I mean, as much as you can enjoy a conversation on burnout, I found it really therapeutic for myself. And I would just encourage you, if you are struggling with burnout or heading that way, to go back and give a listen to those two episodes. And then, you know, we haven't had any guests on the show yet, but if someone is listening and they know someone, or they are someone who could help us with that, like, nervous system stuckness, I mean, maybe we explore that in a future episode.
I love that idea.
But for now, we're going to keep it at our pay grade and talk about, we have enough to talk about with these four categories. So do you want to just jump into the first one or do you want to give us a high level overview? Where should we go from
Why don't we just talk a little bit about mental stuckness? Okay. You know, I think we know stuckness is not one size fits all. So if you're feeling stuck, it is most likely that you're going to fall into one of these categories. And within each of the categories, we'll talk a little bit about, like, how do you know you're stuck and how can you get unstuck, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, so mental stuckness would be defined as kind of like living in that like loop of overthinking, or in the burnout series, you talked a little bit about rumination.
I am the queen of rumination.
Yeah, like when you're just constantly, ruminating or analyzing your next steps, but never taking action, you know, to actually like make any sort of progress. You might be living in like that cycle of like, what if, that thought spiral that happens when, you know, the what if sort of creep up. You might also find yourself living in the all or nothing mindset. Like, I can't move forward here because if I don't get it just right, then I really can't do anything at all. A lot of times, like, this mental stuckness is tied to a fear of failure, imposter syndrome, or needing external validation, actually, like you just talked about. When you're not rooted in like your inner, like, you know, affirmations,
beliefs.
Success is coming from you and you're relying on external validation, that's a way that you can really get stuck, and you can do it really subconsciously, and you can make these like, you know, definitive judgments of inaction, or, you know, decisions of inaction subconsciously before it ever reaches your mind. But,
well, I feel like perfectionism also is something that can block you from making decisions. And I mean, I used to wear perfectionism like as a badge of honor. I mean, when someone asked me in an interview what my greatest weakness is, I would say perfectionism, because I thought that was the right answer to give. And it just like makes my skin crawl now when I think about that.
Right. Like, what are some ways that perfectionism would keep you feeling like stuck?
Exactly what you just said. I mean, I would not take action, or I would not do something, or probably the best example is I would be in a meeting, in like a high pressure meeting at work, and I wouldn't like contribute because I wasn't 100% sure that what I was going to say was going to be articulated in the way that I wanted it to be. So like there was me holding me back. Then it was like, what are the other people in this room who I respect? What are they going to think? And so I just would sit there, and then, you know, my ideas wouldn't get out. And now I try to like veer as far away from perfectionism as I can. And even more so with my children, because as a child, I know perfectionism was a big impediment to me. I mean, I was, you know, I'm proud of what I did as a child and a student, but I think of like all the things that I might have done if I wouldn't have let perfectionism stand in the way.
Ooh, interesting. And so you almost like see in your kids like this like ability to overcome this, like help them overcome something or like break that loop of like, how perfectionism does just like hold you back in life, in sports and academics.
I mean, okay, I don't think I've ever said this to anybody, but I played sports in middle school and some of high school, and I played basketball. And I can remember, like, not wanting people to throw me the ball because I was so worried that I was going to make a mistake when I got the ball. I mean, that's how bad my perfectionism was. So a few years ago, and I know I've shared this with you, one of my kids brought home this, like, piece of paper that said, "Mistakes are proof you're trying." And, like, I think I had it framed in my house for quite some time. I know I still have it somewhere. And just the other day, my son said something. He didn't get something exactly right. And I was like, it's okay. Like, perfect is not the goal. And, you know, we've talked about mantras on this show. One of my favorite mantras now is done is better than perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. I think I've struggled with perfectionism a lot in my life too, where I get trapped in this, like I'll be working on a project and I'll just get so caught up in the weeds of that, you know, the details that I'll just like, I just keep working on it and then I never release it or I never call it done because yeah. I'm just like, I get so worried. I get worried that like, well, what if it's wrong? And what if, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And as you're talking about that, it got me thinking about childhood and, I was a gymnast and I had a back injury at one point.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, I was at an age where I still could have like pivoted to a different sport.
Uh-huh.
But I was really just like fearful of like, you know, what if I'm not good at soccer? What if I can't play as well as the other kids? Mm-hmm. Of course you can't yet because like they've been playing for, you know, or maybe not, but like, that's okay. You don't have to like enter being perfect.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like having like flashbacks of the way I talk to my kids too. Just like trying to, I think, break those same cycles.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with my kids the other day and my daughter mentioned grades and, you know, wanting to make sure that she had great grades. And my son chimed in and was like, "Mom doesn't care." And yeah, I was like, "Oh, wait, did I take this too far? I don't know." Like, I don't know what that balance is, but, yeah, perfectionism is a big one, and I think it's easy for us to, like, go the opposite direction to try to break that mold. But either way, I mean, we've got to do something to interrupt the cycle.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like we've kind of jumped to solutions in this mental bucket, so I'm just going to keep us moving forward on that. You know, you mentioned the rumination and the you're stuck because you keep asking yourself, like, what if, what if, what if?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I like to think about is, what is the worst case scenario? Mm-hmm. So not just, like, what if, what if, what if? Like, okay, let's say this, like, bombs, whatever this is, this project, this idea. What is the worst case that could happen? And, I mean, I work in leadership consulting, so it's not brain surgery or launching rocket ships. So typically the worst case scenario is palatable, right? Mm-hmm. And so I just try to think about like, what is the worst case scenario? And knowing that that's probably not going to happen, but if it did, I would be okay and I could move on. And that helps me to stop all the other what ifs. Mm-hmm. Just like, let's just jump straight to the chase, right? Like, what is the worst case scenario?
Yeah. Yeah. I find myself doing that too. I call it the doomsday scenario, right?
Yeah.
And I know we're not going to dive into the nervous system too much, but that is like, that is giving your nervous system what it's seeking, which is safety. And so you're basically saying, like, this can't get to a point that, like, I will be unsafe. Like, body, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of, like, move on subconsciously a little bit more easily.
Yeah, I like that.
Another mental stuckness idea is going back to that whole, like, analysis paralysis where, you know, I think we've actually talked about this a couple times in through different, like, lenses on the podcast where – you know, especially if you're somebody who is really like you seek external input when you're decision making.
Yeah.
A lot of times it is really easy, I think, to get caught up in the analysis and the research. It could be something as simple as like buying a new something for your house, or it could be like making a career move or, you know, moving your family to a new place. I think it's really easy to just get stuck in the data, the input, what do other people think? What are other people's experiences?
Yeah.
And you just get in this loop of like collecting everything that you never make that shift to going inside and being like, what is it that I want and need?
Mm-hmm.
I am not somebody who's prone to getting stuck in this loop just because I am so intuitively motivated.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's one of the biggest ways that you really can start to like get over that like analysis paralysis or indecision stuckness is like taking the time to get in touch with your intuition and really like listening to your body's response and trusting that like you already have the answers within you.
Mm-hmm.
Like sure, sometimes you need the data and you really want to like validate perspectives based like by talking to people that you trust.
Yeah.
But you know, do some of the collection, give yourself sort of some parameters to work within, mm-hmm. and then take the time to really go inward and be like, what, like, which is the reaction that just feels most like right in my body?
Yeah. I always say pay attention. Pay attention to how your body feels. And then also, if it's a, you know, a big decision, mm-hmm. you know, we're not discounting that there are big decisions that you need to make. Maybe it's just step one of that big decision. Can you just take one step towards that big decision?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the small movements that eventually, like, small actions lead up to, like, bigger actions eventually.
Yeah.
One of the ways that I love to do this is through, like, oracle cards or tarot cards.
Ooh, I knew you were going to say this.
I think it's such a, it's such an easy way. It's not, like, all of that's coming from, like, within you. It's all, like, intuitive guidance, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have, like, oracle cards or tarot cards and you ask yourself a question about the decision that you have to make, like, you could literally, like, take your deck and break it in half.
Okay.
Close your eyes and feel in your body, like, think about your right hand. Think you're half, you're holding half the deck in your right hand, half the deck in your left hand.
Uh-huh.
And then just, like, sit there and, like, feel your right hand, feel your left hand. How do they feel different? Is one of them sort of like lighting up more? Go with that one. Break the deck in half again. Do it again until you come down to like one card. It could take you a little while, but it's a really good way to feel just the difference in what in your, is your body giving you a yes or a no?
Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of different ways that you can get in touch with your intuition.
Yeah.
But I think that that's, it's like an easy one if you have access to like an mm-hmm. oracle or tarot deck.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the last thing that I would say for overcoming mental stuckness is getting comfortable with failure. So I think that a lot of us have this like deep-rooted fear of failure. And I think when you can get comfortable with the idea of like setting yourself up for small failures even mm-hmm. so that you can your body gets comfortable, your mind gets comfortable with the fact that, like, failure's okay, you're going to move on. I mean, it could be a doomsday failure that you're, like, really worried about, or it could just be, like, that your body's having, like, a really natural and, like, subconscious reaction that's sort of, like, blocking you. I read a quote somewhere recently. It was something about, like, how success can be described as the experience of failure after failure without a change in motivation. I thought that was interesting, like how you can basically like just keep failing, but you still feel as motivated to continue on, like chase, you know, it's maybe it's like you're chasing your dreams and you just keep failing. You or I might not call it a failure, but if you have to pivot or redirect or come up with something new, you could boil it down to that. And basically, you know, you just, you keep pivoting and you keep chasing your dream without changing that like motivation.
I might call that learning instead of failing.
Same. I know, but that's
learning my way to my goal.
Perspective shift, right?
And Jess, I so appreciate you bringing this up because I think especially in corporate America, we talk a lot about to innovate, how if you want to innovate, you're going to have to fail, right? Mm-hmm. And then learn from that failure and get better, right? Mm-hmm. What I would just challenge anybody who's listening or who has influence, if you are in a position of power in a corporate role or organization, company, nonprofit, whatever, it's not enough to just say failure is okay. You also have to create a space for people to fail where they feel safe. Mm-hmm. Because if you say failure is okay and then someone fails and they get demoted or reprimanded in a public way or fired, you know, that does not reinforce your message that failure is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point.
And so some of that, what does that look like, right? Well, it's if someone fails, it's offering them feedback in private. Mm-hmm. It's helping them put a plan together so that that specific failure doesn't happen again, but that we're learning from it and we're moving on. But that would just be my ask mm-hmm. is that whether it's a corporation, a small business, a nonprofit, your church, your kids, you know, softball team, if we're going to say failure is okay, we have to back that up with our actions.
Yeah, That's a really good point. That's, I think, like one of those societal shifts that, like, we're all working really, you know, our generation especially, I think, is working really hard to make those changes. But like, yeah, you have to actually like back it up with the elbow grease. You have to do the work to like create the, you know, the situations where it's actually okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Yes.
Emotional stuckness.
Emotional. Okay.
So in emotional stuckness, this is where like unprocessed emotions are holding you back. And I know we've touched on this in past episodes where I personally think that our society has a massive problem with identifying and processing emotions. Mm-hmm. I think there are a significant number of us who were never taught that as children. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're starting to see some, well, we're not starting to see the ripple effect of that is massive. And so I personally think that, like an inability to process our emotions is at the root of a lot of stuckness and just other stuff. So this might manifest as like procrastination, self-doubt, fear-driven avoidance. A lot of times the emotions that these are like that some of these behaviors or like this feeling or state of stuckness are tied to are emotions of like resentment, grief, guilt, shame and fear. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those like really low vibrational emotions that our bodies just react to. We don't even like without the mechanism in place to really like name them right away, accept them and feel them, our bodies subconsciously repress them right away.
Yeah.
And so it creates this like feeling of stagnation that in like a lot of times like we don't even feel like we have a choice. Like we might not even know how to begin to get unstuck when we're feeling this feeling of emotional stuckness.
Yeah.
Like one of the ways I think that a lot of us experience this is like a fear of being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I think our bodies are so programmed to not feel uncomfortable. And this could be, you know, a conscious thing where we've been conditioned to like not want to feel fear or anger.
Yeah.
But I think it's also, it does come down to like a nervous system response where like our bodies just sort of shut down or take over when we start to feel these things. And so it's almost like this exaggerated response to a feeling. Like the feeling itself might not be that bad.
Yeah.
Like you might feel a little bit of resentment, but like your body just represses it when really like if you would just take a minute to feel the resentment or be like, okay, a lot of this is actually coming from the fact that like I resent my friend for having this amazing opportunity that I don't have. Like I think that we feel shame with that for even like thinking that or feeling that feeling. And so we repress it. And so I think it's sort of cyclical where like we feel, but it then repress, feel repressed. There's like, you know, some sort of action that's causing us to repress everything and then we're never going back and feeling it again. So,
and isn't that just like the definition of being stuck? Like I just like, so sometimes I'm a visual person and I just, when you were saying like you, feel it and then you repress it. And I just like picture that all just like building up inside of me. And feeling just like stuck, right?
Yeah. It's like when you compartmentalize and you push it aside and then you just like never go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I love too what you said about, I feel like growing up, it was you're either happy or you're sad. And there was nothing in between. And when you were sad, it wasn't, why are you sad? It's okay to feel sad. It was, buck up, kid. Like, we're moving on. And what I love now as a parent is, we were talking about this earlier, my daughter brings home this daily paper that her teacher puts together. And on most days, it has this square with, I don't know, 20, 25 different feelings. And they, she's asked to circle how she's feeling in the morning. And I mean, that is progress in and of itself, I feel like, because it's not just I'm happy today or I'm sad today. It's all of these other feelings. And then couple that with, we're both fans of Brené Brown and her book from a few years ago, Atlas of the Heart, really does a nice job of explaining the different feelings, even the difference between like envy and jealousy. And I think you know, we talk a lot about self-awareness, but even just fully understanding what these feelings mean mm-hmm. is the first step to then experiencing that feeling and then being able to move through it.
Yeah, I think moving through it is often just a matter of being able to name it, telling yourself, like, it's okay to feel this. Yeah. I can't remember if I've told this story or not, but, like, my youngest has been having trouble at bedtime, and a few weeks ago, she kept telling me she was scared, and, you know, I would be like, well, why are you scared? Let's check under the bed. There's no monsters. Let's check in the closet. There's no monsters. Like, there's nothing to be scared of is basically, like, the message that I was giving her.
Yeah.
And one night I was just like, it's okay to feel scared. Like, it's okay. You know, sometimes the dark can be scary. And that's a feeling that's, like, okay to have in your body. Let's, like, talk about that a little bit. And just the words of, like, saying, it's okay to feel scared.
Yeah.
I could just see this, like, release in her body where she, it was like, you know, she's three. She couldn't communicate, like, what. But I could just watch her body relaxing because somebody was telling her, and she's telling her body, like, this feeling isn't, like, a bad one to have.
Yeah.
It's just a feeling. Let's let it pass. Yeah. Or let's sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of times, like, fear especially is at the root of stuckness, whether it's, like, a fear of failure, a fear of success, a fear of being judged, a fear of being fully seen. There's fear at the base of so much of what we do, and I think we haven't had the mechanisms in place to really be able to identify, like, you know, is this fear, is it another emotion that's, like, similar to fear?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is really just about being able to identify it, name it, and either maybe invite it along on the journey.
Yeah.
Or just acknowledge, you know, it's okay to be here.
Yeah.
Whatever feeling you are. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to move on. You can stay or you can go.
Yeah.
But
it's also like you get to sit in the passenger seat,
yes.
but you don't get to drive.
Yes.
I think you said that before, which has stuck with me.
Yeah. Where you just acknowledge it. It's got a seat. It's got a seat in the car, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I think just naming it keeps you in control.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't name it and you let it, like, sort of sit there subconsciously, you are giving it the steering wheel without even knowing it.
Right.
And maybe it's, like, it's sitting in the driver's seat, but it's not moving because you're stuck. I don't know. But, I think that there's, I think imposter syndrome is another one that is rooted in our emotions. And, so I think that this is one of the most, like, subtle ways that we hold ourselves back. I think this, like, I would argue that this is the stuckness that you feel when you almost feel, like, paralyzed, like, you're like, I have no clue what to do next because I don't even know what the problem is or why I'm feeling stuck.
Yeah.
You ask yourself questions like you might, like, judge yourself, like, why am I feeling stuck over this? And that's a whole other, like, layer that falls in, like, the self-judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the ways that I think that we can overcome this stuckness, this emotional stuckness, like, I love that you mentioned Brené Brown, and the, like, feelings, like, the feelings wheels. There's a ton of apps that are available right now, charts. But I think emotional journaling, which would really just be, like, daily habit tracking, but, like, throughout the day, as you keep a small notebook with you, and as you feel something different.
Yeah.
And that literally might be all that you're, like, the trigger that you're recognizing is, like, you have no clue what the emotion is. You just know you're feeling something different.
Yeah.
Someone track it.
Yeah. So, speaking of tracking, someone was just telling me, too, like, even on your iPhone or your Apple Watch, there's a program or an app that you can, that asks you, like, for how are you feeling right now?
Mm.
And it gives you some prompts so that you can track it that way.
I love that.
I thought was fascinating.
I know there are a bunch of different apps for that too. I had an app recently and I was looking for it a few minutes ago and I can't remember what it was, but it was a really, like, fun way to do it. It reminded me of the chart that you showed me that had the different colors, red, yellow, blue, and green. But, like, it was like you dragged your finger and it, you know, you found the emotion that it was and it collected all of the different emotions that you felt over time. It almost, like, incentivized you to feel or at least name a bigger, a wider variety of emotions.
Uh-huh.
Just so that, I don't know, I felt like it really helped me. And I mean, I feel like I have a pretty strong understanding of the emotions that I feel at this point. But I felt like it really motivated me to really go inside and feel some of the emotions that I'm not as, like, frequently feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely, like, emotion tracking. Maybe not emotion journaling. Journaling, I think, is a whole separate way that you can become unstuck. I think we have talked about journaling before. If you haven't journaled, if you're not comfortable with journaling, I definitely encourage you to, like, start with asking yourself, like, you know, what am I feeling right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or digging deep into those emotions that we just talked about, like resentment, fear, guilt, shame, and thinking about when the last time was that you felt one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you really, like, quiet your mind and go inside, like, can you find one of those feelings actively? You probably can.
Yeah.
And then just let your hand and your pen, like, take over.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised, you know, what comes out.
Yeah. I just want to share, because again, like, being a visual person, so the chart that I was sharing that my daughter, who's in fourth grade, is learning, mm-hmm. is, I think, from this book by Mark Brackett, PhD,
mm-hmm.
Called Permission to Feel. And I'm sure if you Googled this, you could find it online. But I just want to, like, read some of the words, the emotions on here, because, you know, it's not, like we said, just happy or sad anymore. Like, some of the green emotions, which are high pleasantness, low energy. So chill is one of them.
Mm.
Restful, peaceful, grateful, loving. Some of the more low pleasantness feelings, hopeless, morose, lonely. Some others, worried, frightened, furious, frustrated, and then some of the, like, high energy, high pleasantness, excited, happy, proud, thrilled, blissful, playful. So if you're at a loss for, well, I thought it was just happy and sad.
Yeah.
You know, look this Mark Brackett up, and maybe, you know, we could take a note from my daughter's fourth grade teacher and implement this in our adult lives.
Yeah, I love that. We actually just made, like, a calm down corner for the 3-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and it came with all of these posters, and there were several variations of, you know, like, how am I feeling? And I set those aside. I need to put them. I was, like, going to just put them around the house for the rest of us. Like, why is there an emotion wheel for a 3-year-old in the middle of our, like, you know, kitchen? But
it's, we all need it.
We all need it. We do.
Okay. Anything else on emotion?
Yes. So I think aside from actively processing emotions, the other layer to getting out of that feeling of, like, emotional stuckness is the fact that, like, we store emotions in our bodies.
Mm.
So all of us store them differently. And a lot of times it's just about getting the energy in our bodies moving.
Yeah.
So like, a yoga practice is a really good practice to release stored emotion. Vibration. I love the vibration plate. That's another, like, great way to just, like, get the emotions out. I think I love standing on the vibration plate. I think I've said I think I store emotions in my hips. And so I love to just, like, stand on there and for, like, 10 minutes, and then I get off and I'm like, okay, I can, like, feel the lightness of, like, not having whatever it was that was, like, stuck in my body.
Yeah. I've mentioned before, my meditation practice is a moving meditation practice. And when I'm stretching in the morning, if I'm listening to a meditation or just listening to music, that helps me let the emotions bubble up and really, like, clear my brain to recognize what it is that I'm feeling.
That's a good point. Actually, when we, Julie and I we led a Girl Scout troop for 4 years, and there was one session where we led the girls on, there was, like, an emotional element, and we talked about music and the role of music in processing emotions.
Yes.
And I've actually found that, I don't know if it was since then or just in correlation, but, like, if I look at my Apple Music playlist now, like, a lot of the playlist headings are tied to an emotion.
Yeah.
And so I know, like, that's where I go when I need to, like, get that emotion to bubble up and sort of, like, let it out.
I'm gonna start doing that, because I'm a Spotify user, mm-hmm. and I'm going to start leading my search with an emotion that I'm trying to dig up. I like that.
Yeah, it's really, really, I mean, like, cathartic in some ways, but, like, yeah, it helps me, like, categorize my music, too. But, like, yeah, I do a lot of my, like, emotional processing while I'm driving when there's not kids in the car.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, interesting. Well, guys, we're going to leave you hanging again. Julie and I just got to talking, and we just found that we had so much to say on getting unstuck. So in this episode, we talked a little bit about a couple of the ways that you might feel stuck, like mental and emotional stuckness. And in the next episode, we're going to pick up the conversation where we'll talk about energetic stuckness and external factors that leave us feeling stuck. So, until next time, guys, we'll talk to you later.